Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by Eric Messner, Tracy Oliveira, Michael Glenn, Alyssa Wilmoth, David Coyne, Tim Carlin, Gary Tells, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, Dylan Lynch, Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Michael John Casey, Nanette Savard, Stephen Carpenter, and Terrence Aselford. The Loner, Book 7, The Bounty Killers. The shot came out of nowhere.
Easy.
Instinctively, the kid kicked his feet out of the stirrups, yanked the Winchester from the sheath strapped to his buckskin horse, and rolled out of the saddle. He hit the ground feet first and running. He found a thick pine tree and ducked behind it. The kid planted his back against the pine trunk. He was safe, as long as the rifleman didn't move and get a better angle on him. And unless there was more than one of the bastards stalking him. The buckskin had run off into a brushy grove. The kid hoped the horse would be safe. It was possible the man who'd ambushed him might decide to shoot the horse, just to ensure that he was set afoot. It might be wise, in the long run, to draw the fire away from the buckskin, the kid decided. Darting out from behind the tree trunk, he dashed toward another pine, heading in the opposite direction, away from where the buckskin was going. The bushwhacker tried to hit him on the run, the bullet kicking up dirt several yards behind the kid. He hid behind a second tree. The rifle fell silent. The bushwhacker figured out he wasn't going to be able to hit the kid. Maybe he would give up trying. More than likely, though, he would move and try to get a better shot. The kid frowned in thought as the minutes dragged by. He could make a run for his horse, but it was possible the rifleman was waiting for him to do just that. He could call the buckskin to him, but if the bushwhacker figured out what was going on, he would shoot the horse for sure. Or he could give the would-be killer a little surprise. The kid turned to face the tree trunk and tipped his head back. The pine branches above him were heavy with needles and cones, creating a thick layer of greenery. The lowest branch was barely out of his reach. If he jumped, he might be able to get a hand on it. He tossed the Winchester into some brush where he could retrieve it later, if he was still alive. The kid bent his knees, gathered his strength, and jumped. He grabbed the branch with both hands and hung on tight. Ignoring the discomfort of the rough bark, he pulled himself up. Once up, he edged closer to the trunk and grasped it. Within seconds, he was standing on the branch, hugging the tree trunk. Branches thrust out from the trunk all around him. He clambered up them, moving carefully to avoid a fall. The last thing he needed with somebody gunning for him was a broken arm or leg. It was just a matter of waiting for the bushwhacker to get curious enough to ride over there and investigate. Luckily, the kid had developed some patience, a quality he'd never had to any great degree when he was still the rich, spoiled young man named Conrad Browning. He had started to grow up a little when he met and got to know his father, but that first meeting hadn't happened until Conrad was nearly grown. Meeting and marrying Rebel Callahan had helped mature him even more, but Rebel was dead and buried. And once the men responsible for her death had been tracked down and dealt with, Conrad had decided to bury his own past as well. He had adopted the identity of a gunfighter and became known as Kid Morgan to conceal his true identity and help him in his quest for vengeance. Even though it was no longer needed, he had realized that he would rather continue to be the kid than go back to being Conrad Browning. So he had turned his back on what he was and kept drifting. Despite his desire to be left alone with his grief, trouble and danger seemed to seek him out. Being ambushed was the latest instance. Confident that he couldn't be seen from the ground, at least not easily, the kid remained motionless. After what seemed like ages, but was probably more like an hour, he heard a horse coming down the hill toward his hiding place. The rider wasn't in any hurry. He knew that his quarry might be laying a trap for him. The kid was counting on the fact that the bushwhacker might not expect any danger from above. The horse came closer and closer. Carefully, the kid parted a couple of pine boughs, taking pains not to dislodge any cones. He looked down and saw the rider pass underneath the tree.
Damn it. No, it was somewhere right around here that I saw him last.
The kid couldn't see the bushwhacker's face, since he was looking almost straight down at the man. All he could see was the top of a broad-brimmed hat and enough of the man's clothes to tell that he was wearing range garb. He carried some sort of long-barreled hunting rifle across the saddle in front of him, which had enabled him to take those long-range shots. The bushwhacker kept riding. The kid moved another branch aside so that he could watch the man. He leveled the Colt and centered the sights on the man's back. It would have been easy to pull the trigger and blow the man out of the saddle, but that would probably kill him, and a dead man couldn't answer any questions. The kid wanted to know why someone was trying to kill him. A thing like that could turn out to be important. The rider kept moving. Since there was no telling where he might go, the kid holstered his gun and crept out quickly on the branch until it started to droop under him. Grasping it with his hands, he let his feet drop and swung out, releasing his hold so that he dropped right on the bushwhacker's back. The unexpected impact knocked the man forward and off his mount. They crashed to the ground, the landing knocking them apart. The kid rolled over and came up swinging. The bushwhacker was still getting up when the kid's fist slammed into his jaw. The blow landed cleanly and knocked the bushwhacker sprawling. The kid leaped and landed on top of him. Before the man could fight back, the kid palmed out his revolver and pressed the muzzle up under the man's chin.
Freeze, or I'll blow your head off.
That's good advice, friend. You damned well better heed it.
Back off, mister. No matter how fast you shoot me, it won't be fast enough to keep me from killing your friend.
Friend? Said anybody so damn dumb as to get himself jumped on from a tree and be a friend of mine.
The kid could see the face of the man he had tackled. The man's hat had come off, revealing thinning dark hair over an olive-skinned face. The left eye had a peculiar cast to it. Dark beard stubble shadowed his jaw. The kid had never seen him before.
You fellows ever stop to think that maybe this is all a misunderstanding?
No, you're the varmint we're after. You match a description on the wanted posters.
Listen to me. I'm not bloody Ben Bledsoe. I just look a little like him.
Bledsoe? I heard Ben Bledsoe got himself killed down in Arizona. I'm talking about Kid Morgan. You're him, and we're taking you in.
That's crazy. There aren't any charges against me.
Now, that ain't what the wanted posters say. The territory in New Mexico wants you for breaking out of prison and killing some guards. There's a bounty of $10,000 on your head, kid. $10,000 American. Lester and me aim to collect.
Be careful, Mac. He could kill me with the twitch of a finger.
Well, that'd be a damn shame. But you know, if he did, I don't reckon I'd have to share that reward with nobody. Now, would I?
Knowing that a bullet was about to be on its way to his back, the kid threw himself aside just as Mac pulled his trigger. The slug just missed the kid and struck Lester in the face. The kid landed on his back and spotted a short man with a big beer gut standing about 10 feet away. He tried to swing his .44 toward the kid, but he was far too slow.
You son of a...
The kid leaped to his feet and swung around to check for more threats. Carefully, he checked to make sure both men were dead. Satisfied that they were, he replaced the three rounds he had fired with fresh cartridges from the loops on his shell belt under the tails of the dark coat he wore, and then holstered the gun. He looked around until he found his black flat-crowned hat that had come off when he first leaped out of the saddle. Picking it up, he slapped it against his leg to get the loose pine needles off and settled it on his head. Lester's horse hadn't gone far, and the kid brought it back to the place where the two men had died. He tied the reins around a sapling to keep the horse from bolting again. With that done, he fetched his buckskin and the Winchester and looked around for Mac's horse. He found the animal about 100 yards up the slope, tied in the trees. The kid returned to where he had been ambushed. He checked their pockets and found a small amount of money, a deck of greasy cards, tobacco pouches and cigarette papers, and in a pocket inside Mac's coat, a small silver flask half full of whiskey. None of that was what the kid was looking for. He dug into their saddlebags, and in the one on Mac's horse, he found what he sought. He unfolded the piece of paper and smoothed it out. It was a wanted poster, all right, with his name and description on it. In big letters across the top, it declared $10,000 reward. The charges were murder, attempted murder, and escaping from prison. The kid's pulse pounded like a drum inside his skull as he stared down at the crudely printed poster. The charges were lies, all lies. He had never killed any of those guards at Hellgate Prison, nor had he tried to kill them. He had escaped because it was the only way to clear his name. In the end, when the real Ben Bledsoe had been brought to justice, the kid had been assured there would be no charges leveled at him because of the prison break. It was all a terrible mistake. But two men lay dead on the ground at his feet because of that mistake. And with a 10 grand price on his head, Mac and Lester wouldn't be the last ones to come hunting the kid. There was no place he would be safe. $10,000 was enough to put every bounty hunter west of the Mississippi on his trail. And something else on the wanted poster made the situation even worse. Under his name and description and the list of the charges against him, in big, bold letters, just like the amount of the reward, dead or alive. The kid left the two dead bounty hunters where they had fallen. He wasn't by nature a callous person, but Mac and Lester had tried to kill him, so he wasn't going to lose any sleep over leaving them for the scavengers. As he rode away, he pondered his best course of action. He was in the southeastern corner of Nevada, where the state extended in a triangle between California to the west and the territories of Arizona and Utah to the east. The nearest settlement he knew of was the little mining town of Las Vegas, which he had passed through a few days earlier. A long way off in the mountains to the northwest lay his former home, Carson City, and the mining town of Buckskin, where his father had served for a time as marshal. The kid had friends in both places, or rather, Conrad Browning did. But both places also held bitter memories for him. Memories that went far beyond the taste of wormwood and gall. Rebel had been abducted from their home in Carson City. Later, Conrad had burned it down to make it look as if he too had died, so the men responsible for Rebel's death wouldn't expect him to come after them. He wasn't going back to that part of Nevada, he decided. He might never visit Carson City or Buckskin again, and that would be just fine with him. There was nothing left for him in either place. It would be a good idea, though, to get in touch with his personal attorney, Claudius Turnbuckle, in San Francisco. Claudius would be able to contact the territorial authorities in New Mexico and find out why those wanted posters had been issued. The kid needed to get the price on his head lifted as soon as possible, before too many bounty hunters set out on his trail. Las Vegas had a telegraph office, he recalled. He could backtrack and send a wire to Claudius from there, so the lawyer could get started toward clearing up the mess. The kid rode east toward the little settlement. It didn't take him long to reach the edge of the mountains. He paused in the foothills and looked out over the vast sprawl of desert and plains in front of him. He could make Las Vegas in a day if he pushed the Buckskin. But it was too late in the day to start across. The sun was almost touching the rugged peaks behind him. His eyes narrowed as he spotted a thin haze of dust hanging in the air. That meant riders. He couldn't tell if they were coming toward him or going away from him. The kid's frown deepened as he watched the dust for several minutes. Definitely coming toward him, he thought. More than one or two riders, maybe as many as half a dozen. Of course, they weren't necessarily looking for him. They could be on their way somewhere else and not have anything to do with him at all. But it wasn't a well-populated or widely traveled area the kid was riding through. He was simply drifting. He'd wanted to put Arizona and his troubles there behind him. The sight of that dust definitely made him suspicious. All the more reason to hole up somewhere for the night, he told himself. If those riders were looking for him, he didn't want to run right into them. With that in mind, he rode north along a rocky ridge until he came to a spot where several large boulders clustered, and he could make a small fire without it being seen. There wasn't much graze for his horse, or water for either of them, but his two canteens were nearly full, and he had a little grain left in the pouch that he carried. He and the Buckskin could get along just fine until morning. As dusk began to settle over the rugged landscape, the kid unsaddled his horse and found enough dried brush to build a tiny fire just big enough to boil some coffee. He had jerky and some stale biscuits in his saddlebags. That would do for a meal. It was a far cry from the times he had dined in the finest restaurants in Boston, New York, and Philadelphia, he thought, as he hunkered on his heels next to the fire. Those days had been more comfortable, but he didn't miss them. He felt like he had never been fully alive until he came west. He couldn't see the dust anymore in the fading light. The riders might have stopped to make camp for the night, or he might have just lost sight of the dust their horses raised. Either way, the kid didn't care. He wanted to steer clear of them, whoever they were. And yet, as he finished his meager supper and sipped his coffee, doubts began to nag at his mind. Maybe it would be better to know who the men were. If they weren't looking for him, he could stop worrying about them. If they were, he'd have some warning, and he could start figuring out how to deal with that. To determine who they were and what they were after, he'd have to find their camp. When he gazed along the line of foothills to the south, he picked out an orange glow that came from a campfire. It had to be the bunch he had spotted earlier. There couldn't be two groups of riders spending the night at the edge of those isolated mountains. Well, there could be, he thought, but it was mighty unlikely. The fact that they weren't trying to conceal their campfire told him there were enough of them to feel confident they could handle any trouble that came their way. He would be a fool not to stay as far away from them as he could. Unfortunately, his curiosity nagged at him. He finished off the last of his coffee and cleaned up after the meal. By that time, the last of the sunset's rosy glow had disappeared from the sky. It was full dark, with millions of stars glittering in the sable sky overhead. The kid estimated the campfire he saw was about a mile away from the boulders where he had stopped. It was a quiet night. The sound of a horse's hoofbeats would travel a long way in the thin, still air. If he wanted to spy on the men, he would have to approach their camp on foot. He thought he might be able to work his way close enough to get a good look at them, and perhaps even overhear what they were talking about. He had picketed the buckskin, so the horse couldn't wander. After heaping sand on what was left of the fire to put out any embers, the kid put his saddle back on the horse, just in case he needed the animal in a hurry. He patted the buckskin on the shoulder.
I'll be back after a while.
If anything happened to him, the buckskin would be able to pull loose eventually. From there, it would have to fend for itself. Bands of wild mustangs ran free in that part of the country, and it might be able to join one of them. The kid left all his gear and headed for the camp in the distance. His boots weren't really made for walking, but unlike cowboys who had spent their whole working lives in the saddle, he wasn't totally averse to being on foot now and then. The darkness and the rough terrain meant he couldn't travel very fast. It took him close to an hour to reach the vicinity of the camp. As he approached, he moved slower and more carefully. He didn't want to accidentally stumble right into the middle of them. Several different aromas told him he was getting close. Wood smoke, food, coffee, tobacco. He paused to listen. He couldn't make out any of the words, but he thought he heard several different voices. As silently as possible, he crept closer. A massive slab of rock leaned away from him, and the kid thought if he climbed to the top of it, he might be able to look down into their camp. It was still warm under his hands as the stone clung to the heat of the day. The air had more than a hint of coolness in it, typical of the desert atmosphere. By morning, the temperature would be cold enough to make a man's breath steam in front of his face. When he reached the top, he took off his hat and set it aside, carefully. The kid edged his head higher to peer over the lip of the rock slab. The men had built their campfire in the lee of the rock. It would reflect heat back and keep the camp warmer during the night. Five men sat around the fire, talking and passing a bottle back and forth. They wore rough range clothes and had hard-planed, beard-stubbled faces. They were well-armed. Each man sported at least one holstered revolver, and a couple carried two guns. Several Winchesters were stacked nearby, and the kid saw a Sharp's carbine and a shotgun among the long guns as well. A sixth figure sat a short distance off. His legs stuck out in front of him and crossed at the ankle. He wore a poncho and leaned back against a smaller rock. Judging by the way his head drooped forward with his hat brim pulled down over his face, he was asleep.
Well, he can't be too far ahead of us. He was in Las Vegas a couple of days ago.
Yeah, but who knows how far he could have gotten in 2 days.
Everybody we talked to said he didn't seem to be in any hurry. Been like that ever since we left Arizona.
It's almost like Morgan don't know there's a 10 grand price tag on his head.
The kid swung around and looked down at the ground on the far side of the rock slab. The silvery illumination of starlight was enough for him to make out the big, shaggy shape crouched at the base of the rock. Whatever it was, it obviously wanted to tear his throat out and gnaw the meat from his bones. Suddenly, the snarling beast bounded up the rock toward it. The kid's hands shot up and grabbed the thick, shaggy body, using the dog's own weight and momentum against it. He heaved the dog over his head and past the lip of the rock. The dog plummeted toward the ground and the fire below. The kid didn't wait around to see what happened. He took off down the massive stone slab. As soon as his boots hit ground, he headed for the place he'd left his horse.
Everyone just start shooting!
The kid glanced over his shoulder and saw flashes spurting from the muzzles of the long guns. The men couldn't see him in the darkness and were firing in the direction they thought he might have gone.
Get your horse! Spread out and find that son of a bitch!
In a matter of seconds, hoofbeats pounded behind him. All he could do was keep running.
Over there! I see him!
I got him!
I'm gonna kill you!
That decided it. If they were willing to kill him without even knowing who he was, without having any idea that he was actually the man they were hunting, he was willing to return the favor. He moved to the side, brought out his gun, turned and pulled the trigger. The bullet struck the rider in the chest like a sledgehammer and swept him backward out of the saddle. With his free hand, the kid made a grab for the trailing reins the man had dropped. He caught them and hung on tightly, feeling like the horse was going to pull his arm right out of its socket as he ran alongside. After a moment, his weight caused the horse to stop. The kid vaulted up into the saddle. His feet found the stirrups, and he jabbed his heels into the horse's flanks, sending it leaping forward again. Everything had happened so fast. The kid hoped the rest of the bounty hunters might not realize he had taken their partner's place on the back of the horse. Since he was out in front of the others, he kept moving, hoping they would mistake him for the man he'd shot. The kid was a couple of hundred yards ahead of his pursuers when he reached his camp. He dismounted on the run and never slowed down as he jerked the buckskin's reins free and leaped into the saddle. A heartbeat later, he had the horse running strong, stretching its long legs into a swift gallop.
What the hell? Here's Sanders' horse! Get that son of a bitch!
The pursuit was on again, but the kid was mounted on a superior animal. He didn't know the quality of horse flesh that belonged to his pursuers, but he was well aware of the buckskin's capabilities. His horse had plenty of speed and stamina, and could outrun most horses. The problem was that the buckskin wasn't fresh. He really hadn't had much chance to rest after being on the trail all day. Neither had the horses belonging to the bounty hunters, the kid told himself. They might have a slight edge, but he was still betting on the buckskin. The kid headed east, away from the foothills, and across the semi-arid plain that stretched all the way to Las Vegas. The moon had risen, and it cast enough silvery light so the bounty hunters would be able to spot him as they trailed him. At least they had stopped shooting at him, having figured out they weren't going to hit him unless it was by sheer luck. They were still behind him, though. He saw them when he glanced over his shoulder, dark blobs moving through the glimmering wash of moonlight. The buckskin was as gallant as ever, running along seemingly effortlessly. The kid had to trust to luck that the horse wouldn't step in a hole or stumble over something and trip. If the buckskin went down, the fall might kill both of them. If it didn't, the bounty hunters would soon take care of that. His horse couldn't run forever. The kid's only hope was that the mounts of the pursuers would play out first. His spirits rose as that began to happen. He looked back and saw that the bounty hunters were strung out in a line. Some of them were dropping back, falling out of the chase. One of the riders in particular wasn't slowing down. In fact, he appeared to have drawn closer, indicating that his horse was faster than the kid's buckskin. Facing one man was better than facing all five of them, but he had hoped to get away without having to kill any more. Deserved or not, he was in enough legal trouble without having any more fatal shootings attached to his name. Claudius Turnbuckle had plenty to straighten out without that. It looked like he wasn't going to be able to avoid swapping lead with the man closing in on him. The stubborn rider was close enough the kid could see he was mounted on a big, dark horse that seemed to be flying over the landscape. The kid debated whether it would be better to stop and fight it out. But even if he won, he realized, the delay would give the others a chance to catch up to him. They had fallen far back, but it wouldn't take them long to draw even with him if he stopped. His best chance was to keep going. A dark line loomed in front of him, twisting across the ground like a snake. His heart sank as he recognized it as an arroyo. He couldn't see either end of it. Running north and south, it blocked his path as effectively as if it was a rock wall. The kid hauled back on the reins, and brought the buckskin to a skidding halt at the edge of the arroyo. It was a dozen feet deep and almost twice that wide. The banks weren't so steep that he couldn't dismount and lead the horse down them, and probably up and out the other side. But the time needed to do that would allow the bounty hunters to catch up to it. So, it was a fight. If that was what fate had in store for him, so be it. Swiftly, he dismounted and pulled the Winchester from the saddle boot. Leading the buckskin to the very edge of the arroyo, the kid swiped off his hat and slapped it against the horse's rump. The buckskin began picking its way down the slope. The kid wanted the horse out of the line of fire. He went a short distance down the slope himself and dropped to one knee. The ground itself gave him some cover. The man on the black, fast horse was about 50 yards away. The kid levered around into the Winchester's firing chamber. He brought the rifle to his shoulder, sighted in the moonlight, and pulled the trigger. The .44-40 slug passed over the rider's head and went off into the night. The kid had aimed high, hoping it would turn the bounty hunter back. Charging right at him while he had a good defensive position was suicide. The rider didn't slow down. If anything, the horse galloped faster. The bounty hunter's bullets fell short, but they came close enough to kick up dirt into the kid's face. He slid down the bank a little as he blinked rapidly, blinded by the grit that stung his eyes. The big black horse flashed toward him, never slowing. The kid's vision cleared just in time to see the huge animal practically on top of him. He jerked backward and lost his balance, rolling down the rest of the bank to the sandy bottom of the arroyo. As he rolled, he caught only fragmented glimpses of one of the most amazing things he had ever seen. With all its powerful muscles behind it, the black horse took off from the bank, sailing up and over the arroyo. As if the animal had somehow sprouted wings, the horse stayed in the air for what seemed like an impossible time. Its front hooves stretched out, out, as the far bank rushed at it. Then somehow all four hooves were on the ground and the horse was slowing, turning. The rider's gun came up, and the kid knew he was about to be caught in a crossfire. He had managed to hang on to his rifle as he tumbled down the slope. Rolling onto his side, he propped himself up on an elbow and fired. The bounty hunter's handgun fired, but the bullet hit into the arroyo wall several feet above the kid as the rider swayed and toppled out of the saddle. The kid leaped to his feet. He hoped the hunter wasn't fatally wounded, but he didn't have time to worry about that. The buckskin stood nearby. The kid grabbed the horse's reins and led him up the far side of the arroyo. He heard hoofbeats approaching as the other bounty hunters picked their way down the bank as fast as they could.
There he is! Kill him!
Shots began to roar again. The kid ignored them. If one of the bullets was destined to find him, so be it. His eyes were on the big black horse. The magnificent animal represented his last chance to escape. The horse had shied away from the crumpled figure sprawled on the ground. In the moonlight, the kid saw that the man he'd shot wasn't moving. It was the bounty hunter wearing the poncho, he realized. Some of the loose garment was draped over the man's head. The kid grabbed the black's trailing reins. For the second time that night, he stole a horse. The black sunfished a little as the kid swung into the saddle, but his firm hand on the reins settled the animal down. Still leading the buckskin, the kid kicked the black into a gallop. The shots from the remaining bounty hunters were coming closer. He felt the wind rip of several bullets as they passed close to his head. But none of them found him, and the range instantly grew longer as the black horse lunged over the ground. Leaning forward in the saddle to make himself a smaller target, the kid hung onto the buckskin's reins, not wanting to lose the horse. They had been through a lot together. Free of the burden of having to carry the kid's weight, the buckskin was able to keep up with the big black. Both horses swept swiftly over the ground. As the bounty hunters crossed the arroyo and stopped to check on their fallen comrade, the kid was increasing his lead. For the first time since the chase had begun, he thought there was a good chance he might get away. Being a bit superstitious, he chided himself for thinking such a thing, not wanting to jinx it, but no misfortune befell him as he continued galloping eastward. After a while, sensing that even the powerful brute beneath him was tiring, he pulled the horses back to a walk, giving him a chance to hip around in the saddle and gaze behind him. He didn't see anything moving through the moonlight and brought both horses to a halt, listening intently. Nothing. No sound of hoofbeats. He was either so far ahead of the pursuit that it was out of earshot, or the bounty hunters had given up and abandoned the chase. The kid couldn't risk believing that just yet. He gave the horses a few minutes to rest, then started out again at a relatively slow pace, increasing it as they went along until he was pushing them fairly hard again. The kid didn't stop again until about midnight to let the horses rest. He hadn't seen or heard any more signs of pursuit for a while. Would they try to trail him? Or would they cut their losses, turn around, and head west again to search for Kid Morgan and that $10,000 reward on his head? None of them had gotten a good look at him. When he thought back over everything that had happened, the kid was sure of that. So the bounty hunters didn't know he was actually the man they were after. He hoped 10 grand, American, would be a greater temptation than avenging the two men he'd been forced to shoot. He didn't know for certain that either of them was dead, but it was a strong possibility. Once he felt the horses had had enough rest, the kid kept on the move for the rest of the night. As the eastern sky was turning orange with the approach of dawn, the kid checked the saddlebags draped over the black horse's back. He thought he might find some clue to the bounty hunter's identity. There might be something he would need to send, anonymously, of course, to the man's family. He found supplies, ammunition, a spare Colt revolver, a roll of bills that added up to several hundred dollars, and an envelope. It was addressed to L. McCall, in care of a hotel in Tucson. The kid turned the envelope over, saw a return address scrawled on the flap. The name on it was Hoskins, and the address was in Kansas City, Missouri. The kid didn't particularly want to read McCall's mail, but he decided it would be better to see what was in the envelope. A letter might tell him more about the man he'd been forced to shoot. Maybe more than he really wanted to know, he thought warily. But he lifted the envelope's flap, slid a couple of fingers inside, and brought out a folded piece of paper. It was blank, and had been wrapped around a photograph to protect it. The kid lifted the picture, turning so the dawn light fell over it. The photograph was of a little girl, probably 4 or 5 years old. She wore a frilly dress, nothing really fancy or expensive, but nice. Long, pale hair fell over her shoulders. She had gazed into the camera with a solemn expression on her face. The kid supposed she was pretty, although he wasn't much of a judge of such things. He turned the photograph over, thinking there might be a name or something written on the back. Nothing was there except the name of a photography studio in Kansas City. No hint of who the girl was or how she was related to the bounty hunter named McCall. As far as the kid could tell, if anybody had a rightful claim to the money McCall had saved up, it was the little girl. Whoever had sent the picture ought to have it back, too. McCall didn't need it anymore. When he got to Las Vegas, the kid decided, as soon as he had sent a wire to Claudius Turnbuckle, he could wrap up the photograph and the cash and send it to Hoskins, whoever that was, at the address in Kansas City. He didn't need or want the money himself. Since it had belonged to a bounty hunter, it might well be blood money. But the little girl wouldn't know that, and she might need it. Carefully, the kid folded the photograph back into the piece of paper, slipped it into the envelope, and replaced it in the saddlebag along with the roll of greenbacks. That done, he mounted up again, riding the buckskin and leading the black. The big horse was even more impressive in the growing daylight than he had been in the silvery moonlight. The kid wasn't sure what to do with the black. People would remember a horse like that. Leading it could draw more attention than he wanted, and somebody in Las Vegas might recognize it as McCall's. He was already worried that somebody might recognize him as Kid Morgan from the description on those wanted posters. At the same time, he hated to let the black go. A man didn't run into a horse like that every day. Sure, the black didn't belong to him, but he thought the fact that McCall had done his damnedest to kill him ought to count for something. He would figure it out later, the kid told himself, when he got closer to Las Vegas. For now, he rode east, into the rising sun. In the end, that afternoon he found a place to leave the horse. It was a little canyon formed by a pair of sheer, rocky upthrusts. A tiny creek trickled through it, no doubt fed by springs higher in the ridges, and hardy grass grew alongside the stream to give the black something to graze on. If it was possible, though, the kid intended to return and claim the animal for himself. A man who could switch back and forth between two horses like the black and the buckskin could outrun just about anybody. But for now, the kid entered Las Vegas. The day had grown hot, so he wasn't wearing his black coat, and the sleeves of his white shirt were rolled up a couple of turns over his tanned forearms. fact, the town wasn't very big, with only a single main street and a few cross streets. The springs that made Las Vegas a green oasis in the middle of a vast brown and tan landscape had attracted many different people over the years, beginning with the Paiute Indians. Mormons had established a settlement there, but it hadn't lasted. The discovery of gold and silver in the nearby hills had made Las Vegas spring to life again, and ever since it had flickered in and out of existence like a candle flame, depending on how the mines were producing. At times, it was a bustling settlement, but it went through stretches when it was little more than a ghost town. The place seemed to be doing all right. A spur line had been built from the main route of the Santa Fe Railroad in the south, and that had brought the telegraph wires with it as well. Those telegraph wires were what interested the kid. The sooner he got in touch with his lawyer, the better. A water tank stood at the far end of the settlement, beside the railroad tracks. The telegraph office was inside the depot. The kid had to ride the entire length of the street to get there. No one seemed to pay any attention to him. He didn't hurry, keeping the buckskin at a casual pace. Everybody in the street and along the boardwalks scurried for cover. The kid reined in sharply and looked for the source of the shots. Whoever was burning powder didn't seem to be shooting at him. Several men spilled from the double doors of an impressive two-story building constructed of large sandstone blocks. Painted on the wall above the awning over the boardwalk were the words, First Bank of Las Vegas. That and the gunshots were enough to tell the kid what was going on even before he saw the bandanas pulled up over the faces of the men who ran out. Smoke curled from the barrels of the guns in their hands. A bank robbery was none of his business. He had problems of his own. He was willing to let the outlaws get away, though the possibility they might have killed someone during the shootout in the bank nagged at him. But then a man came running around the corner carrying a shotgun. Sunlight winked off the badge pinned to his shirt. The four masked men who had just run out of the bank saw him and swung their guns toward the lawman. The kid knew they could fire before the man would be able to bring his scatter gun to bear.
Hey!
The kid palmed out his Colt and squeezed off a shot. The slug hit one of the outlaws in the back of his right shoulder. He dropped his gun and staggered into the street, clutching the wound, and collapsed. Realizing they were suddenly caught between two fires caused the remaining outlaws to hesitate, giving the lawman time to raise the shotgun and squeeze off both barrels. The double load of buckshot tore into two of the robbers, flinging them backward and shredding their flesh. When they landed on the boardwalk, their chests and faces looked like raw meat. That left only one of the outlaws on his feet. The kid snapped a shot at him, but the man twisted around and darted back through the open doors into the building. The lawman started toward the entrance, obviously intending to pursue the lone remaining robber into the bank. He didn't notice the wounded outlaw in the street had clambered up onto his knees and was fumbling to pick up his fallen gun with his left hand. The kid saw the threat and was swinging down from the saddle even as the outlaw finally succeeded in scooping the revolver from the ground. Moving to where the man could see him, the kid leveled his Colt.
Don't do it!
The outlaw hesitated for a heartbeat, then jerked the gun toward the kid. The kid fired. The slug hammered into the wounded outlaw's chest. The lawman had disappeared into the bank, hot on the heels of the fleeing outlaw. The kid bounded onto the boardwalk and stepped into the doorway. Instantly, his eyes took in the scene. The outlaw had managed to grab a hostage. His arm was looped around the neck of a terrified woman as he dragged her backward. Her body acted as a shield. The man thrust his gun toward the lawman, who had dropped his empty greener and hauled out an old long-barreled revolver. It was a standoff, as the badge toter pointed his gun at the bank robber and the hostage.
Let Mrs. Grimsley go. Nobody's dead in here, so you're not facing murder charges, son. If she gets killed, you'll hang sure as hell.
No, I won't. I'm getting out of here, old man. You let me go, or this lady's blood will be on your head, not mine.
It's not gonna work like that, and you know it. The only chance you have of walking out of here alive is to surrender, son.
Stop calling me son! I ain't your son.
No, but you're young enough to be, and I don't want to see you dead.
The outlaw moved his gun back and forth a little, tracking from the lawman to the kid and back again.
Who's that? Your deputy?
Somebody back there?
Yes, but I'm on your side, Sheriff. I'm the one who took a hand in the ruckus outside.
Much obliged for your help, mister. If you don't mind, why don't you go around back and come in that way? We'll have this varmint between us.
Sure. Want me to go ahead and put a bullet in him while I'm at it?
Sure, unless he wises up and lets the poor lady go.
All right. Damn it.
He angled his weapons barrel toward the ceiling and lowered the hammer.
I'm putting the gun down before I let go of this gal, though. I don't want you trigger-happy law dogs ventilating me.
The kid kept his Colt level and steady as the man tossed the revolver on the floor. Then he gave the woman a shove that sent her stumbling clear and thrust his hands in the air.
Don't shoot. I'm giving up.
A couple of sober-suited bank tellers rushed forward to help the woman, who appeared to be a customer who'd been in the bank when the holdup took place. They assisted her through a gate in a wooden railing and onto a chair, where she sat fanning her face, looking like she was about to faint. The kid and the local lawman converged on the outlaw from different angles. When the lawman was close enough, he suddenly lifted his gun and smashed it against the side of the robber's head. The man went down hard and didn't move.
I'm not sure there was any call for that, Sheriff.
I'm not the sheriff. I'm the Marshal of Las Vegas. And I'm too old to risk a desperado trying any tricks while I'm getting him locked up. He'll be easier to handle this way.
The kid replaced the three rounds he had fired outside and slid the gun into leather.
I suppose it's up to you how you handle your business, Marshal.
You're damned right it is. Like I said, I'm obliged to you for your help, but I'll do things my own way.
Fair enough.
The kid started to turn toward the double doors.
Now stay right where you are. I want to talk to you. Bennett! You and some of your employees lay hands on this bank robber. Carry him around the corner to my jail.
A portly, balding man, who was probably the bank manager or maybe even the owner, pulled out a handkerchief and mopped his perspiring forehead.
Of course, Marshal.
Bennett motioned for the two tellers who had helped the female hostage to come with him. The Marshal stepped over to the woman.
You all right, Miss Grimsley?
Yes, I'm fine. I was never so frightened in all my life as when that man grabbed me.
Well, he can't hurt you now. When I buffalo somebody, he stays out cold for a while.
The men from the bank, aided by a male customer, had taken hold of the unconscious outlaw and lifted him from the floor. They were ready to carry him out. After picking up his shotgun, the marshal moved to accompany them to the jail and jerked his head at the kid.
Come along!
The kid was getting a little tired of being ordered around. From the looks of things, the Star Packer was used to getting his own way. Not wanting to draw any extra attention to himself, the kid followed the group of men out the door. A large crowd had gathered in front of the bank to gawk at the bloody corpses of the dead outlaws. Trying to make the gesture look natural, the kid reached up and tugged his hat brim lower to shield more of his face. He also kept his head lowered as he fell in step beside the marshal.
All right, you folks, break it up and go on about your business. The Undertaker will be here in a minute, and he'll need to get through with his wagon to load up what's left of these ne'er-do-wells.
Did they get away with any money from the bank, Marshal?
They didn't get away, period. What about it, Bennett? Did they get their thieving hands on any loot?
No, the shooting broke out before they could start emptying the teller's drawers. They never got around to forcing me to open the vault.
What started the ball?
The ball? Oh, the shooting! One of my tellers, Calvin here, grabbed his gun and got off a shot. We all dived for cover when they returned the fire.
That true, Calvin? You keep a pistol in your drawer?
Yes, I do, Marshal. I got held up once when I was working at a bank over in Flagstaff, and I swore it would never happen again.
Well, that was mighty brave of you, and mighty foolish. You could have gotten yourself killed, not to mention everybody else in that bank. Next time some owl hoot with a mask on his face comes in, you just give him the money and let the law deal with him.
Yes, sir. I was just trying to do what I thought was right.
Yeah, you let the law do the thinking.
A few minutes later, the lawman led the way inside and directed the men with him to place the unconscious outlaw in one of the four empty cells in the cell block. They lowered the man onto the narrow bunk and filed out of the iron-barred cell. The marshal checked the outlaw's clothes for another gun or a knife, but didn't find any weapons. He stepped out and shut the door.
Marshal Fairmont, I intend to bring up the subject of hiring a deputy for you at the next town council meeting.
I told you before, and I'll tell you again, I don't need a deputy. I can handle things just fine without one.
Without this young fellow's help, you'd be dead right now, Marshal, and those outlaws would have gotten away.
You don't know that.
I saw everything from inside the bank. And I'm sure plenty of other people in the street did, too. This young man saved your life. What's your name, friend?
Browning.
Well, Mr. Browning, I'm grateful to you. Every citizen of Las Vegas is grateful to you for taking a hand in this affair and making sure those vicious desperados were brought to justice.
No thanks necessary. I just saw the trouble and figured I ought to take a hand.
Not everyone would have done that. Most people run and hide when the bullets start to fly. I know I hit the floor pretty quickly when the shooting started in the bank.
That's smarter than what I did.
Bennett and the bank tellers were gazing at him with open admiration, while Marshal Fairmont regarded him with a shrewd, somewhat resentful frown. The kid thought maybe it would be a good idea to get back on the Buckskin and ride out of Las Vegas as soon as he could, getting while the getting was good.
For the next 24 hours, your money's no good in this town. Whatever you need, supplies, a hotel room, food and drink, the bank will stand good for it. You're a hero, my boy, a hero.
Bennett, why don't you get yourself back to the bank so you can see about getting all that bullet damage repaired?
Ooh, that's right. Remember what I said, Mr. Browning. Whatever you want, it's on us.
The kid started to follow the group of men out.
Hold it, Browning. I said I wanted to talk to you.
What is it, Marshal? I have business to tend to.
Oh, is that so? Well, I'm curious what sort of business brings you to Las Vegas, mister.
Nothing that concerns the law, Marshal.
Everything concerns the law if it affects the safety of the community. And having a gunfighter in our midst is a definite safety hazard.
I never said I was a gunfighter.
You didn't have to. I saw how slick you handled that Colt out there, Browning. There aren't very many men who can do that. Now, I admit I haven't heard of any gunfighters with your name, but maybe that's not your real name.
Why don't you just call me a liar while you're at it? In case you didn't notice, my gun was fighting on your side out there.
Well, I noticed all right. I noticed plenty.
Look, Marshal, I have to send a telegram, and I'd like to wait a little while to see if I get a reply. Other than that, I have no interest in staying in Las Vegas. I won't be here long, and I won't cause any trouble while I'm here.
How can you guarantee that?
I suppose I can't, but I promise you I won't be looking for any trouble.
Yeah, I suppose.
Dad? Dad, are you all right? I heard all the shooting, but I couldn't get away until now.
The kid turned his head to look at the woman who had just come into the office. She was in her early 20s, not much more than a girl. Wings of honey blonde hair framed her face. She was tall and slender and moved with a natural grace.
Carly, take it easy. I'm fine.
I heard some talk on the street about some killings.
Four men tried to hold up the bank. Three of them are down at the undertaking parlor by now, I expect. The other one's safely locked up.
You killed three men?
Only two. This young fella took care of the other one.
She turned to gaze at the kid. Her brown eyes were open wide with admiration. Despite not wanting to, he took off his hat. The courtesy that Western living had instilled in him demanded it.
Then, you saved my father's life.
I don't know about that. Everything happened so fast, it's hard to say.
Well, I think you're just being modest, Mr.
Browning.
Well, just in case I do owe you my father's life, Mr. Browning, I want you to have supper with us tonight. It's a small price to put on such a debt, but I'd like to do it anyway.
Nah, blast it, Carly.
By the way, I'm Carlotta Fairmont, named after Emperor Maximilian's wife, but everyone calls me Carly.
I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, Miss Fairmont.
Supper's at 6.
She nodded toward the rear of the jail.
That's our house, back there behind this building. You will be there?
I suppose so, and I'm much obliged, Miss.
Carly. We're not very formal around here. Las Vegas is just a rough little frontier settlement.
All right, Carly.
Carly turned back to her father.
You sure you're all right?
I'm fine. You fuss over me too blasted much, girl.
Somebody has to. I'll see you at 6, Mr. Browning.
I don't much like the idea of having a gunslinger sitting at my dinner table.
It wasn't my idea, Marshal. If you want, I'll stick by what I said earlier. I'll ride out of Las Vegas just as soon as I've gotten a reply to my telegram.
No, if you did that, I'd never hear the end of it. You said you were coming to supper, and you're coming to supper. That's all she'll stand for. You still got time to send that wire of yours.
That's just what I intend to do.
Yeah, well, try not to shoot anybody while you're going about it.
Only if they shoot at me first.
The depot was built of red sandstone, as opposed to the heavy tan blocks that made up the bank's walls. The atmosphere in the lobby was hot, sleepy, and quiet. He saw the window of the Western Union office tucked in a corner and headed for it. A gaunt, elderly clerk wearing thick spectacles and a black cap manned it. He looked almost too frail to push down the telegraph key, the kid thought, as he came up to the window.
A message for him, please.
Why, here you go, sonny.
The old-timer slid one of the yellow flimsies under the wicket.
Stranger in Las Vegas, ain't he?
That's right.
The kid picked up a stub of pencil from several that lay there and stepped over to a counter to compose his message. He thought for a moment about how to word it, then wrote, "Reward out for Kid Morgan, stop. Should be no charges pending, stop. Investigate and quash, stop. Browning. He went back to the window and handed the form to the clerk, who counted the words and named the price for sending the message. The kid slid a coin under the wicket.
Kid Morgan, eh?
What about him?
Well, just a funny thing, that's all. I was just reading about him when you come in.
The clerk reached down for something, and the kid's breath caught in his throat. Surely the old fool wasn't reaching for a gun. Did he really intend to apprehend a wanted fugitive himself? The clerk put a thin yellow-backed booklet down in front of him. The kid saw the crude drawing and the garish lettering on the front of it.
Whew, yes, sir. Kid Morgan and the El Dorado Gold Train Robbery. He's one hell of a yarn. Lots of fighting and shooting.
The kid was startled. There were dozens of dime novels about his famous father, but he had never seen one about him before. He managed not to grin.
Where did you get this?
Oh, you have to send off for him. Some company back east publishes them. There's scads and scads of them, all about these different quick gun fellas.
Think there's any truth to them?
No, probably not. Some of the folks in them are real enough, mind you. I've done read some about Bill Cody and old Wild Bill Hickok, and they was real enough, but I know good and well they never did all the things they got wrote about them.
No, probably not. Well, enjoy the rest of your book, but send that message for me first, all right?
Sure thing, mister. What if I get a reply?
I'm having supper with Marshal Fairmont and his daughter, and after that I suppose I'll be at the hotel.
The kid dropped a nickel on the counter.
Can you send a boy to bring the reply to me when it comes in?
Yeah, sure thing.
The kid looked down at the dime novel again. The illustration on the front cover showed a man with an impossibly huge hat firing two revolvers into a gang of ruffians and outlaws on horseback as he stood on the top of a speeding train.
Is this supposed to be Kid Morgan?
Yep, that's him all right, defending the gold train. I ain't finished the story yet, but I'm sort of figuring that maybe he's trying to fight off that bunch because he wants to steal the gold for his own self.
You could be right.